When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Are the old world picturesque shores of Europe calling you? Set sail on an adventure with Avalon Waterways. Enjoy an elevated cruising experience. Avalon Waterways offers smaller ships, bigger experiences with fewer people and more of, well, everything good about river cruising. Don't just dream about quaint towns and cobblestone villages. See them for yourself and make lasting memories. Discover limited time offers today at AvalonWaterways.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Really? No, really. Really? No, really.
Hello and welcome to Really No Really with Jason Alexander and Peter Tilden, who both invite you to subscribe to our show. You don't even have to mail anything in, just push the subscribe button. And speaking of mail, today's episode could be titled Hello, Newman, because the internationally beloved actor Wayne Knight visits Really No Really to talk about his iconic roles, including Seinfeld's scheming mailman Newman and the techno whiz Dennis Nedry in the original Jurassic Park. Wayne also discusses getting work based on his weight, being held hostage on the set of Oliver Stone's JFK, the bizarre audition that got him his part in Basic Instinct, the disgusting reality of being spit on by a dinosaur. Here's Jason and Peter.
You didn't want the bell. I think bell has been a major asset to the show.
It annoys.
Really?
No, really. In 1957 on radio, that was a very powerful sound effect. Today?
Well, you would know. Hello!
And as I say at home, I always love when they get to see the real you.
Yeah, okay, so that's right. So what I love today is that I feel at home because a person that I was happy to work with has joined us today. Someone who I admire and respect.
How much do you like doing this? Just
on a scale of 1 to 10?
We can shut it down now. We can shut it down now if you want.
But a man who
I made a deposit for the mics and the cameras. Right? I need
a man who whose work I was aware of long before he became a international, iconic figure. I was aware of this man's work upon the Broadway stage. I was a huge fan. I was very excited when we actually made our acquaintance professionally. For 9 years on the number one hit comedy of the 90s. And today.
And I'm thrilled. I was thrilled to make his acquaintance because, and people say this often, that he's one of the funniest guys I know. This is truly, in conversation, I break up. I could be talking about anything.
Right, before we sat down in front of these mics, we've already had things he said that I could write down and go, I'm using that.
he's a joy, as a smart man, as you know, can talk about anything.
Yes, he is.
And an extremely funny man. You all know him. I think everybody knows him.
The temptation is to say, hello, Newman,
but we're going to say hello to our friend,
Mr. Wayne Knight. Welcome to Really
God
No Really, sir.
Bless you.
So
all.
Exciting to see you. COVID, God, we've lost touch with so many people.
Ever since COVID, I have not been the same. I become Selma Diamond.
Selma Diamond was a famous actress and comedian.
There you go. So,
how are you, bro? I've talked to you recently because we were working on something together that had nothing to do with show business, but I haven't seen you since the pandemic began. How's life? What's going on? I know you're working. You're in a show and you're
stuff
always working.
No, I'm not always working. I'm always not working. But now I am.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, that wasn't like
But was it, was it, but but that's so interesting because I knew we do a little bit of research about all of our guests and I knew some of this stuff about you, but you had such a kind of crazy, rich, diverse life around what we know you for as an actor that I almost want to, I want to start by going, if this hadn't happened for you, if acting, what did you want to do? When did you go, oh, I'm going to be an actor? And what else was on the table when you?
A biochemistry.
No, are you serious?
No.
I don't doubt it because I'm not just saying this to be nice. I've had one of the things I've enjoyed so much about being around you all these years is you are legitimately one of the most intelligent, well-read, fascinating people I know.
I'm not.
I'm a functioning idiot.
I don't read. What I do is I listen to conversations, repeat them as if they were mine.
Oh, good. Okay.
And then leave the room quickly. And what that does is it creates...
The impression of intelligence.
I do impressions of intelligent people.
You know, this is taking me back to phone calls. Wayne would say, you're not politically, blah, 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 and you go, I gotta go.
Yeah, you just gotta leave quickly.
Yeah.
Don't stay too long after the intelligent
comment. All right, comment. Wait a minute. Before acting,
yes.
You were a private investigator.
Yes. How long? 5 years I was a PI in New York.
I gotta hear. I can't.
I knew this because you had told me that before. But how? Really, why?
Listen, you got the bell. Really,
you have to say it. Say it.
So
I know to hit the bell.
Don't yell. Why can't you say it? It's pretty. He was a private investigator.
Because I know it.
Really know.
You're the one. You know, that's like, finding out.
When is this going to go digital?
They're finding out. They're finding out.
Do you really think the analog bell works? I think it's old fashioned.
You know what? I give it in. I give it for him.
Just
private
a little.
Something to play with.
Were you a good private investigator?
Oh no. But the thing is, here's the thing. So I'm an actor, right? And I did a Broadway show, and one of my castmates, you know. We're young, we're in our 20s, so when you crap out after that, you still crap out.
Right.
You know, you think this is going to be a continuum, and right. I'm going to last forever. And,
yes.
You know. So I didn't want to wait tables again. I'd been on Broadway and stuff, and I had a friend, he says, I got a great job. Yeah, what do you do? He goes, I'm a private investigator. I go, what? You don't have any criminology background. You never were a policeman. You don't know anything about this. He goes, that's right. I go, well, who would hire you? These people. I go, why? Why would they hire you? He said, they like actors. I go, why do they like actors? They're not upwardly mobile. They don't want a full-time job. And they're totally unscrupulous. I went, that's correct.
That's me.
They're willing to lie about themselves. Ad infinitum, you know, I mean, I've been building resumes my entire life. So why not just build an entire character that was fake and then walk in a door? And that's what I wound up doing. And I did it on phone and I did it in person. And I talked to like admirals, heads of industry, senators, getting references on people. I found out that somebody had been in a mental hospital the previous summer and they were trying to get a job as a startup engineer at a nuclear plant.
That's a sitcom pitch. That's a sitcom pitch right there. Oh my God.
Then I'm like so proud of myself. I go, and he was in another, and he had shock therapy and everything. Then the phone rings and it's the candidate. The guy who's trying to get the job.
Oh, my God.
And he goes, I'm so thankful to you. I've been hoping that a headhunter would come around. Nobody's ever had any interest in me. For 2 years, I haven't been able to get a job.
Oh
my family is about to go
oh
under.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Wayne.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Wayne.
Yeah. So
and this is before Google. This is before the internet. You're a gumshoe. You're running around doing everything.
Oh, I remember I had one where I'm... Well, I'll give you the whole schmear. We were doing this for an arbitrageur, right, who has a lot of money. And he has an au pair, an Irish au pair, who's in his home taking care of his kids. A very attractive young Irish woman. And he says to his wife, you know, Maura is so talented and so clever. I think we're doing her a disservice by having her be here in the house. I should bring her down to the office and give her a real job. I think that she can go far. He goes, okay. So she goes down there and, of course, gets immediately pregnant. But she is a Catholic girl.
Oh my God.
And she will not have an abortion.
Right.
So the arbitrageur sets her up in Red Hook, Brooklyn.
because God knows you can't get to it. You can't get away from it. So we just stash her over there in Red Hook and maybe, you know, she'll go away.
Oh, so my God.
Then they hire us to follow her. The wife finds out about this somehow because he tells the wife, listen, I think that the only thing I can do is like 4 days a week, I'll be with you. 3 days a week, I'll check in on her just to make sure she's not doing anything, you know? And so the wife hires us to follow her because she might be cheating on him. And if she's cheating on him, he might dump, you know, dump her. So I'm following her. I'm in Red Hook in the rain in February. There's a three-legged dog walking by, and I'm like, fucking hell, I hated this. She's pure as the driven snow, this girl. I follow her for miles from restaurant to restaurant, whatever, and whatever, whatever. There's nothing wrong with her. Meanwhile, the wife says that she wants to hire us to follow the husband. Then the husband sees the wife, the people following him, and he believes that the wife is colluding with the girl for a divorce settlement. So we're hired by the wife, by the husband.
And the girl.
No.
Oh.
Then the wife begins to have an affair with the head of the detective agency and has lunchtime nooners with him.
Oh, my God. Really?
I'm telling you, how could I leave this job?
And the overtime is unbelievable. Now, do you have to sit there like at three, if they're out till 3 a.m, you're there till 3 a.m.
Yeah, well, no, you have this thing, you know, you put your sodas under the car if it's winter. You know, instead of hot coffee, you have your cold soda under the thing. You have a sandwich. You got your thing. You got, you know, you're all decked out. You're waiting there. The worst thing that could happen is if they leave the house.
Because then you got to move.
You got to move, you know, and we don't have cell phones in those days. So you got to move and get from to a payphone or whatever the hell. You don't know what, or a walkie-talkie.
And I always wondered, too, in every show, even the best show, when you leave, they look around and there's a car there with two guys sitting in it that's so obvious. Yeah. And then you pull out and it's 1, 2, they pull out. How do you do that in real life?
You realize that people don't think they're being followed all the time. So if you are standing next to somebody in an elevator, they don't go, are you following me? You know, no, I'm not. They don't think that way.
All right. That makes us five years.
5 years. Yes. And you know, I eventually didn't get fired. I had to leave because my landlord was also my boss. The head of the detective agency
was also your landlord?
It was also my landlord.
You dropped a bomb right before we started going, saying, I was talking to you, and we were talking about weight loss and character, and can you keep a job? Do people hire you once you look because they think you're not funny? And you said, my first job ever was on Broadway wearing a fat suit.
Yeah.
I think I saw the show. Was that Gemini?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was in a fat suit padded to a 54-inch waist. At the time, I had like a 36-inch waist. I had to eat a plate of spaghetti and a jelly donut 8 times a week. And the prop man on the show was a psychopath. And what he would do is not cook the spaghetti and arrange it so that it looked cooked. And then like put some hot sauce under it so there'd be steam coming and you'd be like...
Oh, come on.
Crunchy spaghetti, you know, and stale donuts. And I would have to, like, bring him gifts and beg that he'd be nice to me because they wouldn't fire him.
You didn't have an equity rep? Because I know they're so effective.
Oh, they're terribly effective, yes.
Was this a personal vendetta?
I don't think he liked me because I was on stage.
And he was, so how long did that role go?
Oh, I was in that for 3 years.
Long run. So you come from Broadway. But I guess that jumps to the question.
Now, wait a minute. Hold on. I can't let that go by. You did that show for 3 years?
Three years. Over 1,000 performances.
Okay. Wow. That's unfathomable to me. I know people do it, and there are records that go far beyond that for being
they're
in a
sad
role.
People.
But my God, how did you not lose your mind?
I did.
If I do 6 months, I go, please give this to another actor.
Oh, well, wait a minute. You're talking about the producers, for Christ's sake.
No.
I don't know how you did that for a week.
No, when I was in talk. But when I was in Broadway Bound, Broadway Bound, I had a 14-month contract. At the 10-month mark, I knew I was not doing my best mark.
I lost my mind, What's interesting is I learned how to act, and at the same time, I reached the threshold of my tolerance.
Yeah.
I had to come to a new way of doing the show, and I did, and it worked for me.
Yeah.
Instead of doing a show, I was doing a decathlon, and each of these scenes became events, and I was trying to score tens on each event, and it became not about the audience.
Yeah.
It became about me, that I knew what a 10 was, and I'm going for it. And if the audience don't like it, that's their problem. But if I hit a 10, it's a 10.
That's
Did that help, the reframing it that way?
It did, because I could get out clean from a performance no matter what. I never had a bad, it wasn't like, the bunch of idiots, they're crazy.
Yeah,
right. No, that's what happens in a long run. In a long run, people talk about how bad the audience is.
Right.
You know, and I said, I'm going to give that up because I don't think that's beneficial to you.
Wow.
You know,
I know what you mean. I remember doing the same play, Broadway Bound, and you know, the first 6 months, you're going, oh, I hope they laugh. Oh, I hope they laugh. After 6 months, you go, ah, sheep. Fair.
Who cares?
Sheep. They'll laugh at anything. Sheep.
I know that was and you still laughed.
So you do get demented. It does happen.
Well, wow. Not only that, but I was working with, this woman who is insane, who used to, she used to hawk into a curtain before she went on stage. Here we go. You know, and then she would go. And I'm like, And so there was a curtain with stalactites and stalagmites hanging off of it that I would have to push out of the way to get on stage. Oh, my. Then we also had, we had a replacement one time. We had a guy who was replacing for the father. He went on stage. He was wearing his jacket inside out. I said to him, schmuck, you got your jacket on inside out. He said, it's been established.
Oh my God. So speaking of weight.
Was this the show that you left college one credit shy for?
What happened is, you know, I went to New York. I had a, you know, I'm waiting tables. I'm waiting tables at Wolf's Deli across from Lincoln Center. The worst. Oh, God, I hate it. I had to wear a stupid little jacket, and I had to cater to all these old women who were like, I want it on the side and lean. You know, it's like, yes, I know, lean and on the side. Okay, fine. So that's where I am when I get the call that I got the job.
Uh-huh.
I am wearing the stupid little jacket. I go, excuse me for just a moment. I went out into the street, threw the jacket into the street, never went back.
Wow.
Just walked out of there thinking I'll never wait tables again. Not so.
Okay, we'll go to the weight thing in a minute. But, and this I think is a really, no really, if I got this correct, and you
before,
give me the,
what are you ringing before you?
It's a preparatory, really, no really.
Oh my God.
So I read, and I think I got it right, that you were doing a sketch show in England with Emma Thompson.
Yes.
Emma Thompson is ultimately kind of responsible for a lot of things in your life, in that she turned you on to Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah. Right.
Who gave you a gig.
And I tried to turn her off. told him, I said, if you're going to marry him like a Black Widow spider. And then eat his head.
Which is such sweet advice. So Kenneth Branagh puts you in something, which got you to Oliver Stone, which got you to Paul Verhoeven, which got you to Spielberg.
Yeah, well, not necessarily in that order. Okay. How it begins is... I got to Oliver Stone from Lincoln Center and from other things, from Risa Brayman and being seen, you know, I remember auditioning for Oliver for JFK and them saying, don't be theatrical. Whatever you do, don't be theatrical. He hates theatrical. I said, what do you expect me to do? Like, how do you do it? You know, like, the fuck, what do you think I'm going to do? But in any case, I went in and I gave this Georgia kicker kind of like accent because I know that I was looking for somebody and I'd growed up in Bartow County, Georgia, so I could do it. So I did that accent and Oliver loved it. That is not theatrical. Thank you. Thank you very much. And so then I get to New Orleans to do JFK and I'm playing a real guy, this guy Numa Bertel.
Right.
And he's from the French Quarter. He's from, you know, He talk like he come from Chapultepec. He's got that kind of New Orleans thing. It's a very different kind of accent than the one I was doing. And so I'm trying to, so I'm going to do that for him. He goes, I don't want that. But I want what you did in the audition. I go, but that's wrong. That's not the accurate accent for this guy. He goes, I don't care. I go, but I do. And he hated me for the rest of the picture. And so he would say things to me. He would taunt me. He would be mean to me. We would be doing a scene. He goes, you have dialogue in this scene. You think you can handle it? Like, yeah, thanks.
So is this an accurate quote? When asked what it was like working on JFK, you said,
nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
See new things. Try new things. Go back centuries while living in the moment. Forge new paths while discovering old ones. Pedal, paddle, and paint while trekking, tasting, and tailoring experiences that transform you into a better version of yourself. Immerse yourself in the world by activating your mind, your heart, and your body on a river cruise exclusively from Avalon Waterways. Save with limited time offers at AvalonWaterways.com. Avalon is cruising. Elevated.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
So is this an accurate quote? When asked what it was like working on JFK, you said, it's like being held hostage in a bank holdout.
Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
But it was Dog Day Afternoon. It was a good picture.
Oh, my God. No,
wow.
No, so, and on the last day, he's going, you know, to Laurie Metcalf, you're going to miss me. And he looked at me and he goes, you're not going to miss me. I go, no, I'm not.
So let me finish this area. So
yes, yes.
Verhoeven,
yes.
You go to Verhoeven and you're in the famous movie, which is The Shadows on Basic Instinct.
Yes. Well, how that happened is simply an audition. Going into, like, you're going to meet Paul Verhoeven. You're going to meet him in a hotel room.
Oh, it's a good audition.
Like, one of those. I'm like, oh, great. Okay, all right. So, like, you know, I go up the stairs, I'm waiting at the door, and the door opens, and he's there with a camera. I go, hello? Yes? He goes, come in. All right, okay. He goes, look into the camera. Okay, all right. He goes, look closer. Okay. Now maybe you do a lick with your lips. Okay. No, I do a lick. He goes, all right, good. Maybe you do another lick. Maybe do lick. And I go, lick. Yes. Well, now, maybe you do a third lick. Lick. And I go, lick, no, too many licks.
And this was your reaction, by
that's
the way.
How I got the job.
And this was supposed to be you looking at her in that famous scene. Now, is it true? Because I know people are probably asking many times, what did you see? You were looking into a light box.
I saw the Mac box. I mean, the camera, I got a Panavision camera an inch from my face. You know, and everybody else is going, wee, and I'm just like, hey. You know, I don't see nothing.
So you didn't see nothing, but you sweated like a pig.
Was she even on the set when you were doing it?
No.
No, she was that. No.
So, there's that.
Yes.
And then because of all the schwitzing.
But can you imagine the sense memory it took to come up with that sweat?
To really feel like you were looking at, And if Spielberg saw you sweating, and you were the first one cast in Jurassic Park?
This is what I was told, that he saw me in Basic Instinct and thought, what if that were a dinosaur instead of a wide open vagina? Literally, I got cast. I had an agent at Gersh at the time who says, are you sitting down? I said, no, but I will if you'd like. He says, Steven Spielberg has called. What's you in his next movie? And I'm like, okay, why is that so startling to you?
Isn't that our mutual goal?
This guy had never talked to anybody who knew Spielberg.
But literally, I not met Spielberg. I had gotten cast. I was flown to Kauai. They took me in a bus up a cane road covered in mud, and it's rocking and whatever. We get to the top of the cane road to Blue Hole in Kauai, the rainiest place in the United in the world. 360 days a year it rains there, but they had rain machines in case, and they used them.
Wow.
We get there to the gates of Jurassic Park. We pull up to the gates of Jurassic Park, and at the bottom of the gates of Jurassic Park is Spielberg
with the viewfinder. Right.
And I walk up to him and I go, I hope I'm the guy you wanted. He says, you're the one.
Wow. And did you enjoy, like, that movie must have been tough to do. I mean, you were mud, it was there.
I was soaking wet. I was as fat as a human can be. I mean, most of the time while I was on the picture, people are going, he's going to blow, you know? And I'm like, no, I'm all right. I'm soaking wet. And they've got like this kind of like a polo shirt that's not very stretchy that goes over me that I have to, while wet, put on, take off, you know? No, it was not.
But an iconic scene. And then the last question about that is this true or false? Because the rumor is one night, I guess you were filming here. And the spitter, that dinosaur, spit in your face, and it was a purple dye.
Yeah.
And then you had to go to Seinfeld, and your face was purple.
The problem with this is, the guy who I was shot in the face with an air rifle filled with dyed black KY jelly. There is a guy who was shooting me with the thing. He's looking at me disdainfully, which I found troubling. And he said, don't blink or I'll have to do it again. I'm like, okay. So you have to turn to camera and without blinking, I'm going to shoot you between the eyes with this gun. And if you blink,
I'm going to do it again.
I'm going to do it again.
Oh my God.
It took two takes. I couldn't get out of the first take. But that guy now lives across the street from me and he has a better house than I do.
All right, I hit the bell at the right time.
Oh my gosh! So there you go. And now you were 360 at that point, right?
Oh no, not that. I was like 327 and a half.
But that wasn't when you. I read that when you lost the weight, the fear became the doctor saying to you, and it was during a Seinfeld episode that you were palpitating or something.
Well, what happened is it was the episode where. The farmer's daughter and the farmer and they bringing the bottle deposit. I got Rance Howard firing a gun over my head and we're running through the field and this girl is yelling like, goodbye, Norman. Because she didn't know the name Newman. She literally was too stupid to figure out that it was Newman, not Norman. And we kept it in. So I'm running back and forth in this fake cornfield with my pants down and I'm known for being able to run quickly.
Don't blow by that. I remember watching him do and going, this guy can move. move.
Not
you
anymore.
You were fast.
I was fast.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to have back surgery in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But in any case, so I'm running back forth, running back forth, running back forth. We're doing it over and over again, and I'm getting what feels like angina pains. So I go immediately to a cardiologist, and I say, I think I'm going to. And he's like, yeah, you got hardening of the heart on one side from blood pressure changes and this and that. And if you don't change your life, you're going to die. And I'm like, I don't want to die. Okay. So I went to a trainer, started the whole process, and began, you know, everything I could think of.
To lose the weight.
To lose the weight. And I did lose, you know, a good portion of it. During Seinfeld, there was, you could see some weight loss. Yeah.
As you were coming down, I was going up.
Yeah, and then I left, and, you know, who the hell knows? But, I mean, it was, this has been the lifelong thing. You know, you go down, I've got like 48 different pairs of pants, you know. Oh, it's Tuesday, I'll wear those.
You know, I got, but, for the both of you, because I know you had a weight thing. Can I go down the list of stuff to see if you used it to lose weight? Ready?
Yeah, but then I want to come back to exactly what he's talking about.
PenFen.
Yes.
No.
Herbalife.
No.
No.
Atkins.
Yes. Yes. And gave me kidney stones.
All right.
Thank you.
Beverly Hills Diet.
No. Mm. My wife, though.
Zone.
Yes.
Yes.
Paleo.
No. Yes.
Gastric sleeve.
No.
Yes.
Gastric bypass.
No. No.
Lipo.
No.
Stomach stapling.
No.
Grapefruit diet.
No.
Master Cleanse.
Yes. In fact, you were there. I was on it for 16 days.
You were there? What the hell were you there during his Master Cleanse?
We were working on a show that we had developed together, and I'm in the writer's room on day 16 of the Master. I feel great. Day 16, I'm never going to eat again. Day 16 of the Master Cleanse, and somebody pitches me an idea, and I go, yeah, mm-hmm. What was that? My brain just stopped working.
He shut down.
Just stopped working.
Jenny Craig.
Yes.
Weight Watchers.
Yes.
Any kind of food delivery service.
Yes.
So you've, wow. This shows you how hard it is to change behavior and your pattern.
Yeah, but now you, and I also, I went to the place we don't talk about, you know, where the 12-step place we don't talk about. Mm. I went there as well. And that was actually quite beneficial for me.
And now they have Ozempic.
Yeah, but I don't, and I have never used it because of the fear of, you know, not being like, I see people who take the Ozempic. I can't stop. You know, you're looking at Sharon Osbourne or whatever, and she's like, I wanted to gain back some weight.
It's too much. Well, yeah. And you're starting to find some stuff long term that may happen from that. I know that you can't have surgery. You got to tell your anesthesiologist because then it can affect your surgery. Anesthesia. There's something to do when you're on it. And they give you the anesthesia.
Well,
I found that reacts in different ways.
So, but you know, you left out one that I actually did try as well, and that was hypnotherapy.
And?
You're looking at me. But Wayne, at one point you and I had discussed, and this because we're show is always about things that really kind of boggle our mind and make us go, what could that be about? But I remember you telling me at one point you had, I remember seeing you. You looked, not that, you know, being thinner is necessarily the thing, but you were really pretty trim, and you looked really fit, and you had lost, I think you said, close to 100 pounds, and work sort of dried up.
Yeah.
Nobody knew really what to do. And you,
well, like,
at
nobody
that point,
really
to
said,
me, you looked like a leading man. I mean, you
that's
really
the worst possible thing that could have happened to me.
I understand.
I mean, like, people are going, what I need is a really attractive looking Wayne Knight. No, that's not what people want. I want someone I can safely ridicule and kick.
Right.
If I can't ridicule you, what the hell do I want you for?
Now, but so what do you,
how do you get around
that? What do you do with that? I mean,
well, the way, I mean, the way
you've had a blessed career, but what is that's
well,
not
the best thing that happened to me was doing art on Broadway.
Yeah.
It didn't really lead to other things in that direct way, but I got a little review as the Times was looking at the people who'd replaced and whatnot, and they said something nice like, by the end of the play, you forgot that Newman ever existed.
Yeah. Mm.
And that was, to me, one of the greatest things that anybody could say to me.
Right,
you know? I mean, I'm very proud of Newman, and I'm very proud of the characters I've done. I give them full intent. I go all the way, you know? But I also started out doing straight film and comedy television. I didn't do comedy and film. It was weird. You know, it allowed me kind of back and forth.
Yeah.
Until Seinfeld happened, and then, you know, you're who you are. You want to look, there's so many things that come from being famous, and there's so many negative things that come from being famous. You got to take the good with the bad.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
but for you, was Newman a net neutral or a net positive?
I think it's a net positive because, you know, there's so many things. It gives you credibility in a way that you can't get otherwise. I mean, right. You know, you delivered. And you delivered on a show that I believe delivered for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I will look at you. Let's come on in.
Right.
You know, right. So I think that gives entree in a way.
So for me, you know, we talked about it before we started taping,
yeah.
You know, there were 2 years where I blatantly and without trying to hide it, wore a toupee because I had lost so many roles to producers who said, well, I don't want the audience to think of you as George.
Right.
You know, my theater career was more often than not playing 15 people a night. I'm a little
yes.
bit of a chameleon. And, you know, I desperately tried to create a different impression. So I feel blessed, and there's never a day that I don't thank God Almighty and Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David for giving me the life that I have. But George has opened a lot of doors. George has closed a lot of doors
yeah.
for me that are not going to open. But I at least, and I don't mean to put it in these terms, but it's a reality. I was compensated for that in an extraordinary way.
This is exactly the problem.
Yeah.
It is exactly the problem. Because if you were not, then all what you get afterwards, you are not being compensated for in terms of the time lost.
Right.
What I didn't understand, too, is that there are opportunities that come at the end of a show. And if those opportunities don't hit, then you're back at sea.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And you think, well, this is just the beginnings of, you know, the opportunities that will come from having done this. But you don't know that. And you
right.
don't understand that. And I have a much better view of the business now than I did when I was young. And it's, you know, just commodities broking. It's just, you know, what's hot at the moment. And,
right, you bet.
Did you get yeah. a lot of pitches for your own sitcom right after Seinfeld?
Well, I actually, Larry Charles wrote a sitcom for me, and to which, you know, Jerry said, Larry? Anyway.
He said,
I understand an insane monologue, but an entire sitcom and a pilot. And we were pitching it, you know, to Jamie Tarsus
was it Warren?
Yeah, Littlefield? Warren and Jamie. And they were eating a sandwich at the time. And they were both having sandwiches at the time. And Larry Charles had come in wearing pajamas. And I'm like, you couldn't wear a sweater? Like, maybe pretend you've golfed once, you know? I mean, we're meeting network people. They'd like that kind of thing. And the first thing he talked about was this, you know, it's very much like Hamlet's ghost. You know, when Hamlet's ghost comes in and Hamlet, and I'm like, my eyes are spinning up in my head and I'm thinking, this is the end of my career right now. And it was.
You hadn't agreed that it was Hamlet's ghost going in?
It was a great show. It was a great show.
Wrong pitch.
It was about a vegetarian butcher in Brooklyn.
Writes itself.
Who has to come home to save the butcher shop because his father has died. And, you know, on the street. It was all good, but, you know, it's just the wrong
time.
And
was it Newman-esque, or was it a whole different kind of character?
I'm sure it was Newman-esque in some ways.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the time, I, you know what happens is you become successful at something, and then immediately you say, well, I must repudiate that.
Like, right.
Why right. would you do that?
Right.
It's like, I want to play only serious roles of Nordic men with blonde hair. You know, it's like, come on. You know, it's just like insane.
I was talking to William Macy, interviewing William Macy, and he said, when I was in my 20s, it was all about, can I change, make a difference with it? He said, in my 40s, it was about the cash. And now, at my age, it's, do I have to get wet?
Yeah.
He said completely morphs into that, which is exactly what you're saying. It's just that different. But you would, looking back, you would have done Newman. By the way, Jason hit me with a line. We were both so excited when you were coming in. And you got, I just laughed out loud because...
Well, he asked me, what were the iconic moments? And I said, well, Wayne had two lines that, you know, basically shut me and everybody else down. One of them, I think you ad-libbed. The other one was scripted, but...
And this sounds like an ad-lib from you. He who controls the mail controls information.
I don't know. The one ad-lib was, and then it's... And the barcode reader breaks and it's Publishers Clearing House Sweepstakes Day.
Wasn't the one that killed me? I thought it was an ad lib, is when you're driving the mail truck and it bursts in the flames.
Yes.
And you went, oh, the humanity.
Yes, that was an ad lib.
You know, the cool thing was I used to go visit him on the set and watching everybody do this constantly. The joy on that set was just something.
Well, can I ask you a question about that? I wasn't thinking about this, but. So recently I've seen, there was an actor named Armin Shimerman who did an episode of our show. And I saw something about Keith Hernandez, both of which Armin said that our cast was very unwelcoming to him. He felt like he was not appreciated at all. Keith Hernandez said, I in particular was, I think the word was standoffish. I always thought we were, and I'm not looking for a compliment here. I thought we were kind of a welcoming set. We were excited about people.
Have you ever been on another show?
Yeah.
Well, then, and you still think that? Anyway.
Were we?
No.
Were we cold? Were we welcoming? Were we warm? Were we
anything? You were professional.
Uh-huh.
And you were the top show on television, and it was like, this is opening night on Broadway. Don't fuck it up.
Is that the vibe you got?
Oh, wow.
The vibe is that everybody was thrilled to be there. And they understood the nature of this beast.
Uh-huh.
And Jerry was welcoming and, you know, friendly and whatever.
Right.
Larry was scary as hell.
Yeah.
Because he was too relaxed seeming. And you couldn't, like, how could somebody so laconic and loose be so scary?
Right.
I think that I enjoyed being on the show because every time you started a scene, you knew it delivered. You just had to not be in the way of it.
Right, yeah.
Find the joke, hit the joke. The joke is there. So, I mean, the number of shows I've been on where, you know, you go on an expedition to find the joke.
Right.
Yeah. This was not that.
No, the material was always.
It was always good.
It's, you know, it's just really interesting to me because I always. I knew that Jerry, for the most part, was a warm host for people. I thought, I hoped that I was. I felt like Julia was. I know Michael was off and off working on his own on stuff, but I thought we were all kind of gracious. But I have been on enough other shows to know where the warm ones are. Like working on Maisel and working on Young Sheldon, I went, oh, this is, I feel like I've been here for a long time. I feel like I'm part of the family. Walking right in, there are other shows, and you're walking into a very dysfunctional family.
Or it doesn't feel, you can hear the wind blowing.
Yeah.
There aren't conversations going on
right. Where
people are playing with each other, and then they're doing the show.
Yeah.
Third Rock was the most friendly show I had ever been on, because John Lithgow's father ran a Shakespeare theater. And so he knew how to be the captain of a ship. It was ingrained in him how to take care of people, to be gracious, to make sure that everybody was together, to keep it, you know, moving.
And by the way, we didn't get to it, but back to the fat suit and the fat deal. You know, just in researching, it's really interesting because I was a chubby kid. You know, I went to the Husky shop, you know, where you couldn't.
Yes.
Yeah. Husky.
That's a great. Like, I'm leading the pack at the next Iditarod.
But you know? It's so. Yeah.
Husky. Where did they come up with Husky?
Yeah, right. Husky kid.
Yeah, sensitive. Yeah. Picture of a Siberian Husky's head in a three-piece suit was the logo.
Yeah.
I went, Mom, really?
I had to go to the place for wide shoes. I had to go to the place for wide clothes.
Yeah.
Every freaking thing on me was wide.
Wide whale corduroy. And I went, that's great.
For fat people,
wide and whale, built right into the name.
And not only that, but then you also have the chafing in the other
thing. Wide whale corduroy actually just sticks together.
Wide whale corduroy on a fat person is just a way of starting a fire in the woods.
Absolutely. So to that point, though, it's with the, there's Ozempic shaming now, which is fascinating. People going, oh, she probably took it. Oh, he didn't take it. I can't lie.
Why do you have to do it hard?
Or, well, why should you judge who's doing it? But I never realized to the extent, because when you get into the medical area, and I don't know if you've ever experienced it when you're heavy, the doctors, when you talk to them, they're listening to you about whatever you're saying, but it's really, you know what, lose 40 pounds is the beginning to do it. They diminish what you have. And I didn't realize with the fat shaming, how many people don't want to go to the doctor? How many people are embarrassed to go to a hospital because of the way you're treated? And it's a bigger, much bigger dialogue.
I've got to go have surgery on my back from, you know, just being obese and also thinking that my job was to do falls.
Oh, Wayne.
I did falls for so many years. I started in college falling down concrete stairs, doing falls.
To get lifts.
And yeah. And so I'm on the last show I'm doing, I'm practicing this fall like 18 times before we shoot it because I want it to be just right. And I'm like, what are you, an idiot? You know?
Yeah.
So I've totally wrecked myself. But in going to the doctor, because my legs are all beat up from all the, I don't want to go, I don't want them to see that. When I was doing Jurassic Park, I was, you know, 18 zillion pounds. And my leg kept hitting the Jeep in trying to open the gates.
Right.
And I couldn't get in and out of the Jeep fast enough. The thing is ripping the skin off my leg. And so I'm in Kauai. Everybody else is swimming and whatever. I've got a giant gaping wound on my leg. I don't go to the doctor because I'm afraid that they'll tell me I'm going to die. I'm fat. So I don't want to hear it.
And my doctor does the same.
It's a very serious thing for a lot of
people. He does the same rap every time. I was just there. And he's a wonderful guy. And he does the whole checkup. You go in the office, and this is his rap every time. First of all, God bless your mom and dad. Genetics they've handed you. You are such a healthy guy. Your blood work is perfect. Your lungs are clear. Your heart is good. You've got no plaque. Your cholesterol is great. Blah, blah, blah. Your liver function, your kidney function, terrific. God bless you. You should live to be 110. Pause. What the f*** do I have to do to get 25 pounds off? It always comes down to that. And honestly, it makes me go, I don't want to go. I know what he's going
to
say.
No, what you should say to him is, look, I don't want to shame my children by living to be 130. Let me die at 110.
But it is shame. You know, and I told you, you never, and this is true. People who I've known who are really battling weight, who have an eating problem, never see them eat.
No, they don't eat.
They don't eat.
They don't eat. No. They only eat like when, if there's a blackout, you know, and people are looting, they're eating.
Right.
That's the moment that they're shoving it down the hall.
And I'd have the most delicate little low-calorie meal and go home and eat a gallon and a half of Haagen-Dazs. I mean, it just...
So there's a new study. This is really interesting. This just came out. Brain changes could be the reason it's hard to lose weight. Ozempic and these similar drugs mimic the effects of a type of hormone in the body that impacts everything from the brain to muscles to the pancreas to stomach and the liver. Without taking something to change the hormonal levels in the body, people with certain genetics simply cannot lose weight and keep it off. When we try to lose weight with diet and exercise alone, the hunger hormones skyrocket, the satiety hormones drop, and it's almost impossible to keep the weight off. They're powerful hormonal forces that are pushing the body to gain weight. So they're finding there's stuff going on that's not so simplistic, which is cut this out, which is why the list of diets we talked about don't work for a lot of people. And they just say it's behavioral changes, but now there may be hormonal changes where your body is trying to push.
Well, one of the things like from, I don't know if there's semaglutides, or what the word is for what Ozempic is and what all those type of GL-1 antagonists
type
are.
One
You know, in terms of, it can affect how you can drink, how you can take sweets, how, because the things that give you serotonin based on eating, it cuts off. So the chocolate that would work for you or alcohol that would work for you might not work for you.
I've heard in several cases so far the same thing with somebody who had an alcoholic problem.
Right.
It helped with all the addiction at the same time, because it's hitting whatever the nerve center is or the receptors for that, for satiety and for releasing the drug. So
except if you want to hit someone with a ball peen hammer, that still is there.
Still works?
Don't know
still
why. Works.
Okay.
Thank God. Thank God the classics are still
there. So the ball peen hammer diet has not been discussed.
No, I tried the ball peen hammer diet and it was startling.
Congratulations. You're in the
as we wrap up. Yes, what are we? The Bookie is your new show. Yes,
And also I have a series coming out this year called Them on Amazon.
Is that an alien thing?
No, it is actually. It takes place in Los Angeles during the days of Daryl Gates, and I play a police detective.
Wow!
And it is a one of these kind of horror shows about race.
Don't do it actory.
But I'm not a bad guy.
I hope you're not theatrical.
I'm not theatrical.
Ladies and gentlemen, our friend Wayne Knight, actor extraordinaire, thank you for coming. Thank you for hanging out.
Thanks for the joy
of your company for all these
years. I barely know about the show, but you got all the merch. It's fantastic.
It's fantastic.
We do. We have one. It's just one.
I got a shirt that Peter refuses to wear. He has a cup that he gave it to me, and it didn't get through the dishwasher one cycle. Didn't even get through the dishwasher.
I think a do-rag is the next thing.
a professional do-rag. All right. You're now our merchandise director.
That's right. God bless. Really, ladies and gentlemen.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
Are the old world picturesque shores of Europe calling you? Set sail on an adventure with Avalon Waterways. Enjoy an elevated cruising experience. Avalon Waterways offers smaller ships, bigger experiences, with fewer people, and more of, well, everything good about river cruising. Don't just dream about quaint towns and cobblestone villages. See them for yourself and make lasting memories. Discover limited time offers today at AvalonWaterways.com.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
All right, David, I think we know my buddy Wayne Knight pretty well, but perhaps we skipped something important. What might we have not known?
You know, you covered it pretty well. I think Wayne's filmography, the ups and downs. But, you know, as we saw, Wayne has lost a lot of weight. And we were saying that, you know, he might have lost out on a bunch of roles. And perhaps some role he could wear, and he actually wouldn't be the first one to do this, wear a...
Fat suit, yes. A fat prosthetic, yes.
Right. Now, this is a very controversial piece of costume, right? A lot of people object that it exists.
I
think you should cast the... Brendan Fraser, of course, we remember
The Whale,
in 2022, won Best Actor for The Whale, where he played a man of great size.
Yes.
So there are other films out there that also used a actor that was not the same size. We have The Thing About Pam with Renee Zellweger, who played Pam Hupp. Colin Farrell, right? He was in the latest...
As the Penguin?
2022, The Batman. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
May I just stop everybody for a second and say Jason would love to do that role if ever...
No, you know what? I mean, here's what we said in my group. We saw Colin Farrell as the Penguin. We went, so they made him look like Richard Kind. Why didn't they just hire Richard Kind? I mean, honestly, he wasn't affecting Richard Kind, but he kind of... What they did to him facially resembled Richard Kind. We go, if that's what you're going for... Richard's a fabulous actor. Hire Richard Kind.
You have the Penguin talking like Richard Kind.
Oh, Batman. Batman, I'm coming to get you. I'm not. Why? Why not go after the Riddler? And Richard has a very distinct voice, but he can change it. He's a consummate actor. All right, yes.
You also have the great actor Jared Leto, who plays Paolo Gucci in the 21 House of Gucci.
That was a bizarre...
That was really bizarre. Well,
that was
also
one of those things where I went, unless that guy, the guy he's playing,
sounded like that.
Really sounded like that.
That's a weird choice.
Somebody went down an awfully strange road and nobody put up a stop.
And he also did Mark David Chapman, didn't he? Didn't he play Chapman?
Jared Leto played Chapman?
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to look it up while you do
that. I don't
know. Finish up.
I'm waiting you forget the one that's going to hit me right in the heart.
I know.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
we have the wonderful Sarah Paulson, who donned a fat suit to play the infamous Linda Tripp.
Oh, yes, that's right. Linda Tripp, that's right, yes, yep.
We have Hairspray, the theatrical version, where we have John Travolta playing Edna Turnblad.
Sure.
That was an interesting choice.
Sure.
Another one, very controversial. In the Elvis biopic, we have Tom Hanks wearing the fat
Colonel.
Suit
Colonel
to
Barker.
Play the Colonel Tom
you
Parker.
Bet.
So that was...
Yeah.
David, thank you.
Well, wait, he didn't get to the one that's going to hit me right in the heart.
Go ahead.
Throw it
there
at me.
There is, the 2001 film with starring Gwyneth Paltrow, who played Rosemary in, of course, Shallow Hal.
Right. And boy, did we get... there were people outside that theater...
And forget fat suit. Also, there were all these people there who had tails who were really upset about Jason getting that part.
Oh, you know, you always diminish. You have to diminish.
You had a tail. It was short, but it was a tail.
I know. I know what it was.
Who did the guy off screen? Who made the tail wag? You or another guy?
Two puppeteers.
I don't even want to know where the cables were, but I'm sure
they ran down my leg.
I'm sure they had to clean them well.
That tail was, they came one night. It wasn't in the script, by the way. So we're in the middle of shooting, and I'm in the hotel one night after a day of shooting. I get a call from Peter Farrelly. You in tonight? You in? I go, yeah. There's a guy coming over to take a mold of your ass. I went, uh-huh. Is this film related, or is this just for your personal use? And he comes over, and he does it, and now they make like a girdle, a latex girdle that has the tail apparatus and a spring inside of it with a wire that goes down the bottom of it, out my leg, and I got two guys 5 feet behind me making the tail.
Did you keep the tail?
No, apparently somebody that I met recently, I can't remember who, says they have it, that it was auctioned off and that they have it. If you hear this and you're that person, let us know. But yeah.
Well, David, thank you. Thank you, Laurie. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Wayne.
Really?
God bless.
No, really. As another episode of Really No Really comes to a close, I know you're wondering, did anyone else ever play the role of Newman on Seinfeld? That answer in a moment, but first let's thank our guest, the wonderful Mr. Wayne Knight. You can follow him on X, where he is at iWayneKnight. Our little show hangs out on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Threads at Really No Really Podcast. And of course, you can share your thoughts and feedback with us online at reallynoreally.com. If you have a really, some amazing fact or story that boggles your mind, share it with us, and if we use it, we will send you a little gift.
Nothing life-changing, obviously, but it's the thought that counts. Check out our full episodes on YouTube, hit that subscribe button, and tick that bell so you're updated when we release new videos and episodes, which we do each Tuesday. So listen and follow us on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And now the answer to the question, did anyone else ever play Newman on Seinfeld? Technically, yes. The first reference to the Newman character was in a second season episode entitled The Revenge. In that episode, we only hear the voice of an upstairs neighbor in Jerry's building who is named Newman. We never see the character appear on screen. Newman is threatening to jump from the fire escape, and he briefly engages in a verbal exchange with Kramer, who is yelling to him from a window. However, in that episode, Seinfeld co-creator Larry David voiced the role of Newman, technically making him the originator of the role. One season later, Newman made his first appearance on screen in an episode ironically titled The Suicide, and it was Wayne Knight who walked through that door. And after that, Newman would never be anyone but Wayne. In fact, before the series wrapped up its ninth season, the producers decided to have Wayne record the lines that Larry David had done in The Revenge, so if you watch that episode now, it is Wayne's voice you hear. And with that, we say goodbye, Newman. Too bad they couldn't afford to give you a first name. Really No Really is a production of iHeartRadio and Blase Entertainment.
See new things. Try new things. Go back centuries while living in the moment. Forge new paths while discovering old ones. Pedal, paddle, and paint while trekking, tasting, and tailoring experiences that transform you into a better version of yourself. Immerse yourself in the world by activating your mind, your heart, and your body on a river cruise exclusively from Avalon Waterways. Save with limited time offers at AvalonWaterways.com. Avalon is cruising. Elevated.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.